I'm Derek Jensen. This is Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network. My guest today is Jennifer Bielek. Jennifer Bielek is an artist. Well, I'm going to change that a little bit because Jennifer Bielek is actually an amazing artist. Anyway, a journalist and an activist working for the liberation of women in society, as well as the protection of children and the planet. She's been researching the money and power behind the trans lobby since 2013 and is author of the 11th Hour blog, which I would highly recommend, which covers her research. So first off, thank you for your work in the world. And second, thank you for being on the program.
Oh, thanks, Derek. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to getting some new information circulating.
So in your work, when you're writing about transgenderism, you often refer to the gender identity industry as opposed to gender ideology or the transgender movement. Why is that?
Okay. Well, when I started to research this issue in 2013, there was all this flurry of information coming out, not in mainstream media, but like on blogs and feminist platforms, incredible analysis of gender and identity and sexuality and gender stereotypes and how they all interplay. I mean, really, really great, incredible stuff that I hadn't seen since like the 80s. You know, it's like all that stuff went away, or maybe I wasn't paying attention, and now it was just, you know, flooding social media. So I was really, really engrossed in all this stuff, but nobody was really talking about, like, where was it coming from? And, you know, I was like, well, where did this come from? I mean, we hear this all the time now, like, pretty much everybody in America knew what transsexualism was, but what the hell was transgenderism? You know, I mean, it hit the culture like a tsunami, and it just kept going and going and going, and everywhere you turn, transgender, 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 gender identity. Well, it wasn't even gender identity back then. Then it was transgender, 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 and gender dysphoria, and gender dysphoria. And we heard these things over and over and over again so much, and it was like, what in the heck is going on?
ESPN. MSNBC, Democracy Now, New York Times, they're all pushing it pretty full bore.
Yep. And you know, it was so crazy. Men can be women if they say they are. Like, what? And I came also, I also came at this from the censorship issue. Like, you know, I was working as an ally with Deep Green Resistance. I don't know if you remember this, but it was like, it was a while ago. So, you know, you might not remember, but
I was working
as an ally. Oh, okay. So, you know, so I was working with an ally and I was working, you know, environmentalism. And I think it was you who asked me if I would set up some venues in New York, because on the West Coast, you folks were being deplatformed everywhere you tried to speak. Because you know, you're working for the environment, you know, you're into biological reality, of course, and, you know, because you acknowledge biological reality as an organization, you were being called transphobic and you were being shut down everywhere you went. Which was, you know, I mean, here's the world that you're working to protect, teeming with life because of biological reality and sexual dimorphism in most species. And, you know, you're being shut down because you say that. And it was absolutely, you know, bizarre and wild. And so anyway, so I tried to secure these venues in New York. And in fact, I did, but each one that I secured, it was quickly shut down again. Like, yes, we'll put you up for this date. And then they'd call the next day or 2 days later and say, oh, sorry, we can't do it. Without explanation, they just wouldn't do it. And I was like, you know, after the third one, I was like, holy crap, this is really weird, right? Like, I mean, if this is in fact some sort of new human rights movement, you'd think they'd want people to talk to them, about their thoughts. But no, you couldn't speak. So that started me to, well, then that sent me back to Janice Raymond's book. Janice Raymond is a radical feminist and a medical ethics professor at, and women's studies professor at University of Massachusetts. And she wrote a book in 1979 called The Transsexual Empire. So, which I remembered because I read it in the 80s and I was just floored. It was so brilliant. And, you know, so I remembered the book and I was like, oh, I got to get a hold of this book again, you know? And, so I went through all my books and stuff. I'm looking for this. I found the book. I started reviewing it and I was like, oh, you know, this is what she was talking about, what we're living right now, the transsexual empire. But nobody was really talking about this. Even in feminist circles, they weren't really talking about the industry part of it. So that's why I call it the gender identity industry. It is, in fact, a growing industry by any market, you know, standard. By, you know, anybody that studies the market can tell you that it's a growing industry, and it's poised to be very, very profitable in the future. Gender dysphoria sells, and people are buying. So that's why I call it the gender identity industry.
So can you explain what you mean by it sells, and where's the profit? Where's the profit in it?
Well, this is the thing. I mean, it's so obvious where the profits are in drugs. You've got puberty blockers, right? To stop the natural growth process of children. In 69 gender youth clinics, gender expansive youth clinics in the United States alone that weren't here 10 years ago because these children didn't exist 10 years ago. Or if they did, it was such a minuscule part of the population that it wasn't even worth discussing or, you know, calling attention to. But now there's 69 of these clinics. You know, a couple of years ago, there were like 58. Before that, there was 49. Now there's 69. And the largest of them serves 1,000 children. And most of these children who will go on puberty blockers will graduate to wrong sex hormones. So you've got these two, you know, drugs, these puberty blockers and cross sex hormones with all those children, right, who are going to now become medical patients for life. Especially if they graduate to having surgeries. You know, you're going to have to be monitored medically for the rest of your life. So you're creating medical patients. And this is what Big Pharma does anyway. I mean, they do it every single front. They create a problem and then they solve it with drugs. You know, they medicalize all sorts of things that probably shouldn't be medicalized. Like they don't really, it's all physiology. You know, any kind of problem that comes up, it's all physiology. They never deal with the culture at large or the whole human being, like what might be going on in their lives. Or what's going on in the culture to impact this, you know, they're going to sell you a quick fix, right? And so that's basically, you know, part of what they're driving here. So, yeah. And then you have gender clinics and you have, you know, research and you have gender surgeons and you have training for gender surgeons because, you know, 10 years ago, we didn't have gender surgeons, like really a lot of gender surgeons. We didn't need them. But now all of a sudden we need a lot of people that can do these surgeries. Not only gender surgeries like, you know, trying to make a male pass as a female or a female pass as a male, but now they have these non-binary surgeries that they're doing. Now this is new and interesting. You know, there's a couple of physicians out in California that have, they're doing what's called non-binary surgery. So they'll take a, I don't know if you're ready for this, but they take a man's scrotum and they drill a hole in his body and they turn his scrotum inside out. They put it inside this hole and they leave his penis intact. And this is now called non-binary surgery. Did that hurt?
The first thing that comes to mind is the Island of Dr. Moreau. I mean, this is some real Frankenstein material.
Oh no, and you gotta just see, you know, you gotta see the videos of these people. They're smiling into the camera. They're your healthcare worker. We've designed these new non-binary surgeries for you and, you know, for your, you know, optimal well-being and, you know, all happy and smiling and yeah. I did this blog post recently too with Johnson & Johnson Pharmaceutical Corporation. And they're in Toronto, and they're now, I don't even know if this is staged or not in the video. But it could have been, because we never really get a hold of the audience. We never really see the audience. But it is so macabre, you can't even believe it. It's these two, you know, like mafia kingpins from Big Pharma are there in this conference room to sell double mastectomies for females, young females, adolescents, teenagers, hopefully lower and lower ages, as, you know, as the conference develops, this is their goal. But right now, you know, adolescent females, you know, like teenagers. And they're selling double mastectomies on their healthy breasts as identity medicine. It's absolutely the most craziest shit you ever want to see in your life. Can I say that on the video? On the
Probably should not again, which is horrifying that we can talk about removing healthy breasts, and we can talk about castration, and we can talk about destroying someone's genitals, and in fact that is promoted on, again, MSNBC, Democracy Now, you name it. But we can't say the S word.
Okay.
And by the way, you talked about removing healthy breasts, and I just want to be clear that that's not the the correct language these days. You know about what I'm looking for the quote here. I can't find it. Ricardo Lara is the insurance commissioner for the state of California, and he has redefined girls' breasts as abnormal growths.
Right, right.
So that insurance will cover what they call reconstructive surgery of the male chest,
right,
by which they mean the removal of healthy breasts from a young girl.
Right. Well, you see, these people are, you know, they're being, how shall I put this? You know, these LGBT organizations, I forget which one he's part of, but he's, you know, he's well in, you know, involved in the LGBT, NGOs. And these LGBT NGOs are actually, you know, I would consider them as like subsidiaries of Big Pharma. You know, they provide healthcare, they provide lobbying, they train people to be lobbyists, and you know, so they're working hand in hand with Big Pharma to drive this narrative into the culture that this is normal. That this, you know, dissociating from your body to the point where you want to carve it up, is normal. Now this goes way beyond any kind of, how shall I say, any kind of body augmentation, like piercings, and I mean even on the extreme end of like piercings and things like that, you know, inserting things under your skin so you look a certain way. Now all those things are in one level, right? But this here, this is actually mutilating your sex organs or taking drugs to impact your sex organs. So it's really targeting what we are as a human species. We are a sexually dimorphic species. It goes to the very, very core of who we are. So what we're witnessing here is the corporate colonization of human sex. Not sexuality. They've already corporatized that under LGB. But you can't really expand your market if you've got heterosexuals and you've got lesbian, gay, bisexuals. Now, how are you going to expand this market that you've created unless you have disembodiment? So that's what gender identity actually is. It's a marketing campaign for body dissociation. And when people start to think about it in that context, the whole human rights framework starts to unravel. And also, when you look at the money in the LGBTs, what are now LGBTs, these organizations, first came up around the AIDS crisis because gay men were getting very, very sick. And so there had to be a measure in place to educate the public about how the disease was being transferred. Pharma immediately was in the picture because they needed drugs. They needed research and they needed drugs to cure this epidemic. So they come right into this, like, just growing, like little buds, civil rights movement for same-sex attracted people. And they infiltrate this movement and they remain there. Right? So after, the 90s, they need a new cash cow. The pharma drugs have come down in the United States, because the government has told big pharma, you better bring down these drugs to help us curtail this epidemic, right? And they do. But they're going to need to open their markets again because now they're, these LGB NGOs, have come up and grown and they need a reason to exist. So, first it was gay marriage, which back then I don't think any of us could have foreseen that gay marriage would lead to this. And I think in some ways it has, by intention. I think that, same-sex attracted people, deserve every, respect and consideration and rights that everybody else does. Instead of accepting civil rights unions as their own, it had to be marriage. Why did it have to be marriage? If you could procure the same rights under, unions, civil unions, why was it so important to drive this other thing? And my guess is, and I don't know if this is absolutely true, but it seems apparent to me that this was a way to tie LGB more intricately to our political apparatus.
So I'm wondering if you can talk about some numbers. 'Cause when I learned how much money is available every year is earmarked specifically for propaganda on this issue. Suddenly, ESPN's coverage of the issue and the declaration of Bruce Jenner as Woman of the Year, Woman Athlete of the Year, suddenly started to make sense because the numbers are, depending on your perspective, either horrific or great.
Like in 2003 to 2005, trans becomes a thing within these organizations. Everybody across the board, and this is really interesting too, it didn't happen very gradually, it happened across the board, like now we're doing this, right, across the board, LGBT, LGB becomes LGBT, QI. Plus, right? So all of the organizations that are LGB change the acronym to include the T, at least the T plus, QI, blah, 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 right? And from 2003, so that's 2003 to 2005, they all start doing that. And we see emerging across the globe at breakneck pace, transgender organizations. Now, this is very interesting unto itself because, this is purportedly a minuscule part of the population, growing, of course. But, at this point, it's like it's still minuscule. So why do we need all these transgender organizations? For what exactly? When you go to the organizations like TENI, Ireland, Transgender Europe, ILGA Europe, they're serving myriad countries, many countries, and their main goal, all the money that's going to this, because from 2003 to 2013, the funding for transgenderism within the LGBT acronym rose eightfold. So, and these organizations have come up to drive the normalization of transgenderism as an identity that needs medical attention, right? What else? Sort of going off in the woods here.
Well, I seem to remember, and let me know if these numbers are ballpark. I seem to remember, between the annual expenditures from, what is it, Arcus and a couple others were about like $16 to $20 million per year for use in propaganda. Is that the right ballpark?
I don't even remember. I'm so sorry. I should have looked that up before we had the podcast. But I do know that the span of just a handful of years, Arcus Foundation, whose founder is John Stryker, who's heir to a multi-billion-dollar medical corporation, who was trained as an architect and was working at Greenleaf Trust, a wealth management facility, before he started Arcus Foundation in 2020. Within the span of a handful of years, he had funded his own organization, like $58 million, through his medical stock.
And then we have a couple others. I know that industry is really where the action's at, but I want you to mention two other individuals, if you don't mind, or I'll mention the individuals and then you can riff on them or not. RIFF. They are the Pritzker family and also Rothblatt, I believe his name is.
Right. Okay, so, well, let me just tell you a little bit about Arcus first, then we'll move on to Pritzker. Because Arcus, Arcus Foundation is really, really important. It's, it's driving this ideology globally, the ideology of disembodiment as an identity, that you can be whatever you want to be, that there is no sexual dimorphism, that sex is on a spectrum, which in fact was why the intersex was added to this as a Trojan horse, to drive this narrative of sex on a spectrum. In all throughout society, what they're breaking down is not gender. They're not breaking down gender stereotypes. They're breaking down sex, sexual dimorphism, because, it's a colonization of human sex.
And by the way, I mean, J.K. Rowling is considered the, persona non grata at this point for saying that children should be able to wear what they want. Anybody can wear what they want. They can love whomever will have them. That, I mean, she's saying basically what feminism was saying back in the 70s, which
is
free to be you and me?
But that doesn't really sell. If you're just going to change your clothes, and love who you want, that doesn't really make any profits for the medical industrial complex. This is all coming out of pharma. I mean, let me just go back to Arcus. Arcus is really, is a great example of what's happening on a global scale, because they're the largest LGBT organization in the United States. They came up in 2020. Like I said, this guy leaves his banking industry, to get into, LGBT charitable work, right? And to drive gender identity ideology across the globe. Now, his architect degree really, really served him well in this process, because he built this enormous political infrastructure, tying this ideology, not only driving it with money, gobs and gobs of money, through our cultural institutions, through our human rights institutions, but also creating other LGBT organizations and transgender organizations. He funds them all. He funds, universities, myriad universities. I think he gave $26 million to Kalamazoo University in Michigan for social justice work. But he funds myriad institutions, many universities. He funds churches. He funds the police department. He funds the media, NPR, or is it PBS? I don't know which one it is. I think it's NPR. Yeah, NPR. All sorts of religious organization. And he sends money to all these organizations, and this is global. This is not just in America, but this is global, on with the caveat that they adopt this ideology. So here's this, you know, front for a medical, you know, multi-billion dollar medical corporation. You know, this is like a front, this LGB NGO working as a human rights, you know, movement. You know, you haven't funded the LGB in 10 years, at least. It's all been trans funding to normalize body dissociation for profit. We are much, you know, we're so much more profitable as parts than we are as full human beings, fully sexed human beings. I mean, you have, you know, uterus transplants, and you have penises for women, and you have vaginas for men, and you have breasts for men, and, you know, you got artificial breast milk and artificial blood, and, you know, they just keep deconstructing now at this point, you know. You can buy sperm, you can buy a baby maker, you know. Women, you know, women's uteruses, they're talking about uterine transplants for men. They're doing research on this. It's absolutely, absolutely insane. So this is ARCUS, right? The largest LGBT organization in the United States. The next is Gill Foundation. Now, Gill, as far as I, you know, as far as I can tell, is not really invested much in the medical industrial complex. He's invested in artificial intelligence, which, you know, that we can go there at a different time. But he's also, you know, he's used like $500 million of his own money to drive this issue, gender identity ideology.
Did you say half a billion or million?
Yeah, billion.
So $500 million. That'll buy a lot of press.
Yes, yes.
And a lot of universities.
You know, rights, you know, framework, this doesn't work because human rights movements don't work like this. They don't work like this. They come up from the ground and they have to fight tooth and nail. They have to organize. They have to fight. They have to be in solidarity with other people to get the rights that they want. But this is happening all from the top down. This is happening from the elites driving this into the culture with, you know, money and power. And tyranny. If you don't adopt this ideology, you will become financially irrelevant. And it's not just the funding now that's important, because they've already done all this. They've already done the funding. Now it's in the marketplace. And this is where it gets really hairy, because, you know, when porn entered the marketplace, this is when tech took it to the, you know, took it to the stratosphere, right? Took women hatred was global, right? And how do you stop it now that it's in the market, right? Because everybody's invested in it and everybody's making money off of it. You know, we have, you know, so purportedly this is, you know, when it first hit the culture, you know, in a fury, you know, we had poor gender dysphoric children born in the wrong body and, you know, parents, you know, had to transcend this within their families, but always an ultimately good outcome. You know, these Hollywood stars were rolling out their transgender children, and we had, you know, it was also like, you know, to cultivate your compassion for something that was a medical issue, right? But now, 10 years later, it's completely morphed into, you know, be your authentic self. Cut off your breasts and be your authentic self. It's a completely different narrative now. Right? So they're rolling it out in the span of 10 years. That's a pretty big leap. From a medical issue to a non-medical issue that needs medicine and for you to be your authentic self. I mean,
yeah,
it's wild.
And it used to be when they first started arguing this too, they used to say that sex is physical and gender is in your head. You know, that stupid gender bread.
So the point is
they would say that sex is physical and gender is social. And then it's like the camel getting its nose into the tent that Now the narrative is switched, so you can have the ACLU arguing that sex itself is a social construct. I just saw this the other day. Somebody was arguing, just a bunch of people argue this, that sex is a social construct, to which I respond, how did Tyrannosaurus rexes have babies? I mean, it's we all know that if a man who identifies as a woman, whatever that means, has sex with a, if a male has, who identifies as a woman, which is nonsensical right there, has sex with a female who identifies as a man, and one of them gets pregnant, we all know which one it is, because sex is real and identification is irrelevant to physical reality.
Right, right. So one of their main lawyers, Chase Strangio, a woman, has been on social media now to, you know, selling this BS for years, you know, and now she's getting even more, like, she doesn't couch it anymore. It's like, sex is not a, you know, sex is a spectrum. You know, there's no sexual dimorphism. Now she's just like, just saying it straight out, right? Well, ACLU, like many other organizations, are funded millions and millions of dollars by Arcus Foundation. Hundreds of thousands every year since they opened. I mean, since, you know, since they were founded. It was founded. Yeah. So, you know, she does, probably doesn't even know what she's talking about. You know what I mean? Like what she thinks. You know, I mean, she's just repeating a narrative. We're so propagandized at this moment. I don't know how anybody can think, honestly. It's just, we live in such a matrix. And when I went down this hole in 2013, I never expected I would be here. Like, you know, all these years later, like, looking at this, and it's just, you know, it's getting bigger and more complex and, you know, okay, so let's go back. You asked about Pritzker. So Pritzker is another multi-billionaire family. And one of the family members is Jennifer Pritzker, and he's a dude, and, you know, he was in the armed services and got married and had, I think he had 4 kids, and you know, and then suddenly he hangs out with all these, they're philanthropists, and they give lots and lots of money to lots and lots of different organizations. And, you know, under the guise of being good and being kind. But when you have this much money and you're sending money to different institutions and you know, that depends on whether they go along with your ideology or not, or what it is that you want to be promoted, then this is not, you know, this is in no way democracy or philanthropy as people actually think about it. You know, it's terrible is what it is.
It's propaganda.
It's totalitarian. Yeah, it's really bad. And so Jennifer Pritzker, you know, decides one day to leave his wife and kids, and now he's a woman. He feels like a woman, whatever the hell that means. And, you know, so of course, notice goes out to all these other, you know, rich billionaire philanthropists that he hangs with, and has meetings with, and says, you know, I'm a woman now. So, you know, basically the message is, when I show up in a dress and pearls, you know, you're not supposed to say anything. You're supposed to go along. And everybody does. Isn't that funny? Like, nobody even questions that. It's just like, oh, you're a woman now. Okay. Really? Not one person has a question. Or, you know, thinks twice about it. It's just what it is. Men can be women. Well, okay. It's absolutely insane. So this guy, you know, he comes out. He decides, you know, to impersonate women, you know, procures some female biology at the female biology, you know, clinic. And where you can buy a breast to order. And your own vagina. And so he purchases these things, and he goes about his business, you know, starting to fund, again, all of these cultural institutions, medical institutions. You know, they have at the University of Chicago, they got the Pritzker Medical Center, right? And so hordes of money go there. They have massive, the whole family has massive investments in the medical industrial complex. They started with Hyatt hotels. That's how they made their money. But over the years, it went to, into pharma, you know, into the medical industrial complex. So, you know, and so this college, this medical center that they have, the Pritzker Medical Center, you know, all of these, I started looking when I was researching the Pritzkers, I found all these people coming out of there starting LGBT centers. Like, you know, having little rabbits, you know, it was like crazy. It was like, well, why do they have all these LGBT centers when, you know, you don't really need drugs to be same-sex attractive? You know, like, what's that all about? Why is everybody, you know, building these medical institutions for LGB? Well, of course, it was for T. And obviously, they were expecting a whole lot more than they had then.
So before we move on from Pritzker, if there's more you have to say about Pritzker, that's fine. But before we move on from Pritzker, can we talk about the Obama connection with Pritzker? And if you don't know about that, then I'll tell the story either way.
Oh, well, you know, Obama was pretty obscure as a politician. He came out of Philly?
No. He came out of Chicago.
He came out of Chicago. That's right. Pritzkers live. All the Pritzkers live in Chicago. And Penny Pritzker is a cousin of Jennifer Pritzker. And she single-handedly plucked Obama out of obscurity and drove him into the White House. And Greg Palast has a fabulous article about this. You know, like how she, you know, navigated his campaign and stuff and getting him funding. And, you know, she basically put him into the White House. And the second time as well. And all these big funders, you know, John Stryker, Bloomberg, names, they're all escaping me right now. But all these, like, really big Soros, these big, you know, big kahunas in funding for trans, were all coming out for Obama as well. And so then Obama gets into the White House, and he, you know, passes, he has the first meeting in the White House ever on transgenderism. Now, what the hell is that?
Payback.
You know, you got a small part of the population with whatever, gender dysphoria, you know, and you have a meeting at the White House for this? Like, what? But you have to realize, you know, and then he starts passing all these trans initiatives, what they're called trans initiatives, right? You know, initiatives for these people who pretend to be the opposite sex. Right? Who are using surgeries and medicine. There are no trans people. I mean, there are none. I refuse to get on board with this narrative. This is obscene. This is absurd. There's no tattoo people either. You know, people that get ink on their skin. You don't call them tattoo people. Like they're some sort of subset of human beings. Well, you know, people that call themselves trans, they get surgeries and they take drugs to pretend to be the opposite sex or something in between, whatever they've got dreaming on in their heads. You know, but that doesn't make them a third category of human beings. So I forgot where I was, sorry.
I just wanted to make the connection with Pritzker and Obama. And then,
So he drove a lot of initiatives forward. You know, compliments of the Pritzker family.
And we have about 10 minutes left, and I'll ask you a real wind down question in a while, but I don't think we can talk about money and the transgender issue and the transgender industry without talking about Mr. Transhumanism himself, Martin Rothblatt. Can you talk about him for a minute? Another extremely rich person.
He's really a podcast all to himself, but I will just graze the surface.
Yeah, just touch him. Yeah, just touch on
him. Yeah. So here's this transsexual. He identifies as a transsexual way back in the 80s. He was cross-dressing in a group with other lawyers. He was trained as a lawyer and he was cross-dressing with other men in a group. And he creates with these other lawyers, but he's the one that authors this document that is basically the root of all of the gender identity laws that we're passing now to remove sex from the law and place gender identity in its stead. To create, profits for the medical industrial complex. But he is like an engineer. You know, this guy thinks like an engineer. He created satellite radio. He owned a major biopharmaceutical corporation. He worked on the UN, the Human Genome Project at the UN level. He's done like a lot of things, but so he gathered with these other, cross-dressing men and, identified at that point as a transsexual, and he created this legal document to bring gender identity or disembodiment and into the law to give it a legal structure for protection, right? And so this is the base. This document here is the base of all these other gender identity laws, right? And he works very, very quietly. I mean, he's not like an Arcus. He doesn't have like a big foundation in front of him, you know, that you can really track all of his money and stuff. But, you know, he's written about, transgenderism being an on-ramp to transhumanism, which makes absolute sense in the context that I've been describing. You know, you're opening markets for big pharma and the medical industrial complex by breaking down sexual dimorphism and making us in two parts as opposed to wholly sexed human beings. So there's that. But this thing where he's involved in the Human Genome Project is really, really scary, right? Because this whole CRISPR technology that's coming up, I mean, he's all involved in this stuff. You know, this is where we get to like, woo, like right into our DNA and then manipulating our DNA for profit in myriad ways, right? So this is full on colonization. And this guy wrote the map. Let me tell you, he wrote the map. He actually wrote a book, I think it was Sexual Apartheid. Or he might have retitled Transgender to Transhuman to Sexual Apartheid. And he likened sexual dimorphism to South African sexual apartheid. He thinks that we have to overcome fleshism. All with a goal towards melding us with machines. AI. He's actually made a robot of his wife. He's, you know, done myriad speaking engagements. He's part of the outright out leadership, which is, you know, the big kahuna of driving LGBT into the market. You know, they work with corporations and stuff and, you know, cross market, basically. They work like corporations. You know, we'll give you our myriad rainbow identities, you know, as a loyal constituency, you know, if you promote all of our identities as cool and good, right? So it's like they work like cross marketing, right? So, and he's, you know, he speaks often at out leadership, and he goes around and he does these different conferences on artificial intelligence. He did a conference at the University of Victoria, British Columbia, which the trans chairperson there initiated. And that position, that trans chair position, was funded by Jennifer Pritzker. And Martine Rothblatt was there for the Moving Trans Forward conference. And he talked about how people need to, tech transhumans need to use the same framework as tech transgenders to move this ideology further still and to get people to accept, you know, technological human beings. And like creating an organization like WPATH, World Professional Organization of Transgender Health, Association of Transgender Health, sorry. And so he goes around talking about all this stuff right out in the open, like no big deal, you know. And, you know, once you see, you know, the connections, it just makes sense. You know what I mean? Because they're talking about transhumanism all over the place. They talk about that, you know, more than anybody can actually talk, you know, critique trans ideology in any way. They talk about transhumanism everywhere. It's in Forbes, it's in The Economist, it's in, you know, Insight Analytics, it's in, you know, it's on all different platforms. Myriad people are writing about it. There's courses in universities, there's TED Talks. You know, the richest man in the world, Elon Musk, he just took that position from Jeff Bezos, has said that, you know, we are there, it's happening, and it's really, really terrifying. You know, so you, when you think about it in this context, they have to have a transition, because you can't just roll this out to society. Okay, now this year we're going to roll, you know, we're going to meld people to artificial intelligence and to tech, you know, and we're all going to be half robot. You know, you have to have a transition. You have to have a bridge. So transgender is really the ad campaign. It's a very expensive ad campaign from pharma to drive body dissociation for profit at myriad levels as identities, and then, you know, the deconstruction of sex, and then towards transhumanism to posthumanism. I mean, you have, I forget what her name is, a wonderful professor. She's very, very interesting. Frederica, somebody, I forget. I'm sorry. But she's a college professor. I think she's in New York. And she, you know, does this course on posthumanism. And it's, wow. It's terrifying. It's fascinating. It's, but yeah, I mean, this is where we're going as a society. This is really where we're going. And, you know, if you are going to meld people to tech, you have to practice. Now, what better, you know, practicing ground than young, pliant, resilient, healthy bodies? Right? Children. And if you start driving the narrative young, like all this, you know, you can be a boy or a girl, is all going into the grade schools. This was all bought and paid for during Obama administration, by the way. But all this curricula, you know, driving this narrative is all going into the grade schools. You know, so if you get them young and you get them thinking like this, you know, you're going to have a populace that's like, you know, they're already glued to tech, right? So it's just a hop, skip, and a jump. You know, but you really have to, if you're going to do this, you have to be able to do the surgeries and test the drugs. And there you have it, you know. Plus, you're sterilizing kids. You know, you're sterilizing kids with this. And honestly, I think this is moving so fast because we're running out of planet. I mean, what are you going to do with all these people?
You're not only sterilizing children, but you're also, in many cases, removing their capacity to feel sexual pleasure.
Or to think for themselves, let's face it, or to think for themselves. You know, they're so propagandized, it's just horrible.
So we just have a couple minutes left, a very short time, and there's two things I would like to do. One of them is, well, I'll just ask the first one first, which is, this seems to me really the end point of a nature-hating and body-hating tradition that runs back to the beginnings, at least of patriarchy. And sometime I want to write a book on this. And one of the things I want to include will be a history of castration and patriarchy and a history of genital mutilation that extends from, you know, ancient eunuchs in China to female genital mutilation and this current wave of genital mutilation in among both sexes here. And I don't know. I'm just so can you comment for a moment on hatred of bodies, hatred of nature, and hatred of ourselves as sexual beings?
Well, there's this wonderful Lakota saying, and I don't know who the person is who made the quote, but I always go back to it. Because it's really, really simple and it's so profoundly true. When you get away from nature, when you remove yourself from nature, you become hard. And it's such a walloping quote because that's really you know, the epitome of what we're living now. We've been so divorced from the natural world. We've tortured her so much already. And we live, you know, we live in boxes, we live in cars, we live in front of computers, we live in the buildings that we go to work in. We have very, very little relationship to what keeps us alive. And so I think we've become very, I think it's apparent that we've become very, very hard. You know, we don't really have to worry about transhumanism in the future because we're already there. We are living it already. We are hard. We've come, I mean, for a culture to be lobbing off children's breasts and their, I mean, for a young, probably gay male to have his pre-castration party announced in a major mainstream media platform and celebrated there, People Magazine. The person I'm referring to is Jazz Jennings. You know, he had a castration party. He also had two subsequent surgeries to undo the mutilation and try to make something of it. He'll probably never have, you know, orgasm or sex in any meaningful, you know, capacity that's enjoyable. And this has all been made into television entertainment. I mean, this is psychotic. This is like serial killing on a mass scale. Do you know what I mean? It's just so crazy. It's that deeply, deeply sick and crazy. That's what I mean by that, you know?
So.
Did I answer the question?
Yeah, yes, you did. Yes, you did. And I would like to, point people to the 11th hour blog, which is the 11th hour blog, HOURBLOG.com, where you have articles like gender identity is a massive psyops obscuring eugenicism, or gender tyranny and the silence of those we love. An article that somebody that you wrote, January 31st that, somebody, I know a bunch of people have said it's one of your best ever. Full Monty cannibal stage capitalism is a bloody orgy. No one can ever accuse you of writing, weak titles.
I might have gotten that from you, Derek.
anyway, so I would like to thank listeners for listening. I would like to thank you for your work in the world. I would like to thank you for being on the program. I would like to thank listeners for listening. My guest today has been Jennifer Bilek. This is Derek Jensen for Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.
Thank you so much, Derek, for having me. I really, really appreciate it. It's great to speak with you again, too.